Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This episode of the Bears Talk Underground is brought to you by Sports Drink, your digital water cooler. Sports Drink is a newly created internet community that tries to find the intersection of sports and not sports. They're here to help us grow and to hate your favorite team. A rising tide lifts all boats, so go check them out online or in social. Go to sportsdrink.org or open Instagram and type in Sports Drink, spelled like sports drink but without the vowel. So S-P-R-T-S-D-R-N-K. All we ask is that you close the door behind you. We're trying not to let out the funk. What's up, guys? Third and I guess you can call it final opponent preview for the NFC North, because the next and final episode of the 2022 opponent preview series, we look inward at ourselves, at our beloved Chicago Bears. But this one being the final actual opponent of the opponent preview series in the Green Bay Packers. And of course, our great friend Evan Western from Acme Packing Company is here to help us preview these 2022 Packers. Very interesting season up ahead. You know, the Packers making some changes and keeping Aaron Rodgers, but trading away Davante Adams, letting Za'Darius Smith go, who they didn't miss last year. He was injured most of the season, but, you know, jettisoning a big part of your defense away, who ended up joining a rival in Minnesota, so that could possibly come back to hurt them and what have you. But, the level of success that they have had in Green Bay, especially since Matt LaFleur has come to town, has been remarkable. He's been head coach 3 seasons. The worst they've done is 13 wins. 13-3 the first 2 years, and then 13-4, last season. And that fourth loss, they were phoning it in at the end of the year against Detroit. So, they probably could have easily won that game had they decided to show up for it and not rest for the playoffs. But, they've made some changes this year. They lost some coaching staff members. They lost their quarterback coach, who is our new OC, and Luke Getsy. They lost Nathaniel Hackett, who's the new head coach of the Denver Broncos. So they've, got some new guys in to replace them. They lost Marquez Valdes-Scantling to free agency in Kansas City. I think maybe the Bears were kind of looking at him as well and everything, but it's just a lot of changes going on in Green Bay. A rough off season until they get to the draft. And then the draft is where they kind of seem to turn the off season around, but nobody wins the Super Bowl in April and May. They win it going through the season and getting to the Super Bowl in February and winning the damn thing there. And unfortunately for Green Bay, that is the hurdle they haven't been able to cross. Winning the division, maybe even getting through the wild card and the divisional round, then getting to the NFC Championship game. But ever since they beat us in the NFC Championship game back in 2010 to go to and win the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 45, that's a hurdle that they haven't been able to, clear, even with the one of the best, if not the best, active quarterback in the league in Aaron Rodgers. So we'll see what the Packers look like. They're going to have a couple of new receivers in there. They drafted Christian Watson. They signed Sammy Watkins. And everything. So no Davante Adams. It's a big void to fill. And they'll see if LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers and company can do it. And, you know, Evan's going to help talk us through it. So without further ado, let's go ahead and dive right into it. This is the 2022 Green Bay Packer preview episode of the Bears Talk Underground. So let's get to it. Hang up the telephone. I hear the dial tone ringing out loud. Our last stop in our opponent preview series takes us to Lambeau in Green Bay, Wisconsin, home of the Green Bay Packers. And as usual, that means we have to have our good friend Evan Western back on the show. Despite his allegiances, he is one of my favorite guests. Evan, welcome back, man.
Thanks. Always good to get this in before training camp starts. Really, you know, it kind of feels like it's winding up towards football season whenever we get to talk over this summer. Yeah, so it's always a pleasure.
It's become an annual tradition because
indeed,
especially with you and Jeremy Reisman and Chris Gates. Because I started doing interviews for the show back in 2015, and you guys were among my first guests and still on the show. I mean, it just so happens that, you know, my three favorite guests are the guys, A, that I've been talking to from the very beginning, and B, also the guys I get to talk to twice a year because they're in division. So that one worked out nice for me as far as I'm concerned. So good to have you back, and an interesting offseason for you guys. We'll get to that here in just a minute, including what your quarterback dropped on all of us yesterday, because we're talking today is the 7th of July, and of course Aaron Rodgers dropped his anthology of a tattoo yesterday. We'll talk briefly about that. We won't get too, because we could probably do an episode just on the tattoo. Oh, yeah. And what it makes you think and what it means and all the rest of that, but yeah, we won't get into that. So, well, let's briefly recap 2021, because we haven't had a chance to talk for a while. Not since prior to the Sunday night game in week 14, which was interesting, to say the least, but we'll get to it. You guys had one of those week one, you know, freak things happen. Number one, your game gets moved to Jacksonville because Louisiana was underwater again. And so you go off to Jacksonville, and the Saints hand it to you guys, 38-3. And just knee-jerk reaction, what were your thoughts about that? Were you thinking like, okay, it's week one, no need to panic, or like, oh, God, are we in trouble?
Yeah, there was a lot of panic in the Packers fan base after that one. I can't tell you the last time that Rodgers got benched or got pulled in a blowout loss. It just doesn't happen. And so I think there was definitely an element of panic there. But, you know, at the same time, this is a team that had won 13 games back-to-back seasons, was coming off an NFC Championship game appearance. And fundamentally, you know, that all the pieces were still there on offense, right? So I think it was just a, you know, we need to settle in. We need to figure out what this team really is. And you know, looking ahead to week two, Detroit, okay, coming into Green Bay, that should be a win. And then it was really that San Francisco game in week three. Mm-hmm.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
going out to California that I think Packers fans had circled as, you know, this is going to be the, you know, the test of, you know, is this team actually going to be good again, or are we in for, you know, something unpleasant the rest of the year? And that game was a huge morale boost for the team, for the fan base. You know, the way they won it with that you know, last 30-second drive,
right?
And you know, Crosby hitting a 50-yarder to win the game at the buzzer, and winning in San Francisco against a fully healthy 49ers team, which has really had the Packers number the past couple of years. That was the turning point when everybody was kind of like, okay, yep, that was a fluke in week one. We can write that off as a weird week one Florida thing and get back to, you know, feeling good about this team. And that was, you know, that's exactly what happened, right? They didn't lose again until Rodgers got COVID and Jordan Love had to come in against Kansas City.
Right.
You know, got off to a 7-game winning streak there the first half of the season. And
but it was an interesting first couple of months for you guys, because I remember talking to you prior to week 6 when you made the trip to Soldier Field. It's like, okay, you have that week 1 thing that happened. I mean, hell, even the Bills lost to Pittsburgh at home to start the year, which had some people scratches like, okay, is this the real thing, or is this one of those week one things? And it turned out to be a week one thing. Week two comes around, and at halftime, you're losing to the Lions, and it takes a second half comeback to win that one. You have this down to the wire thing with the 49ers. The Steelers game went relatively well, but then the week after, you have the overtime. You win with you and the Bengals, you know, trading missed field goals in the overtime period there, and then finally Crosby put one through on your way to Chicago. So I remember asking you, it's like, you guys are 4-1, but you know, you're a hair away from being like a 2-3 football team. Yeah. Right now, it's like, how are you guys feeling about it? You know, because it's just, you know, the luck doesn't work your way. You're a losing football team coming into this game, and you need a win against the Bears as opposed to, you know, expecting one.
Right. Well, and through those first 6 weeks of the season, the Packers didn't get a stop in the red zone, too. So the defense was really figuring out what it was going to be under Joe Barry, the new coordinator, at the first part of last year. I think they did a pretty good job for the most part figuring it out down the stretch. There was a really good stretch of football from this defense in the middle part of the season. And not coincidentally, it was around the time that that they got Rasul Douglas in to help fill in for the absence of Jair Alexander.
Sure.
Man, what a revelation he was, picking him up off the Cardinals practice squad, and, you know, a couple of pick sixes and a game-sealing interception against his old team. And,
right,
you know, gets himself a big 3-year contract to stick around in Green Bay. So, the defense was really the big question mark those first handful of weeks. And then obviously the special teams issues that reared their head in Cincinnati and would be a recurring theme throughout the rest of the season. But yeah, there was definitely still some trepidation there. Again, that 49ers game was big. And then the Cardinals game, going down to Arizona with a depleted roster and, you know, pulling out a win in Arizona against an unbeaten Cardinals team in week 8. That was the other real big one in that first half of the season.
What a weird team the Cardinals were last year.
Oh yeah.
I mean, this was a team that was what, 8-1 or something like that on the road, but like 3-6, 3-5 at home last year. Not to mention it's turning into an annual thing that they get off to a blazing hot start and then just piss it all away in the second half of the year. I mean, that was a game. I mean, you had to even think as a Packer fan going, it's like, well, we're not winning this one.
Because Devontae
Adams was gone. You were missing like 4 other guys because of COVID, half the coaching staff, you know, the trainers weren't showing up because they were all sick. And I mean, it was just like, there's no way on a short week on the road and you go out there and you win the game anyway. It's like, Jesus Christ, what is it going to take?
Well, it took Rodgers getting COVID the next week.
There you
go. Yeah. So that threw a whole different wrench into this team and the storylines around it all season. And because that was when we had the whole you know, the whole issue about, well, you know, is he vaccinated? Is he not vaccinated? Right. All that yeah. crap. And that, you know, really put a weird cloud over the whole rest of the season, to be honest with you, at least through to the end of the regular season.
Yeah.
With, you know, what was going on there with him, and then you start getting into the playoffs, and you know, if he somehow tests positive again, you know, what are they going to do about the COVID protocols and things? And I would say that it's a coincidence that the NFL lifted all the protocols for vaccinated and unvaccinated players right around the start of the playoffs, but I don't know about that. But ended up not being an issue anyway, because we'll get to that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, because it was just one of those. You guys just kept finding ways to win football games. You come up short against Kansas City in a game that, even without Rodgers, and despite the rookie mistakes of Jordan Love, you only lost 13-7 at Kansas City.
That was probably the defense's finest moment last season, was controlling that Chiefs defense, or that Chiefs offense. And like you said, holding them to 13 points. And I think three or six of that came off of, special teams mistakes and turnovers again. Right. So really that defense was responsible for about, 7 or 10 points.
Yeah. Shut out Russell Wilson's return, to the Seahawks the week after. I mean, the guy came back from a broken thumb in like 4 days. I don't know what the hell he was thinking, but, and he looked like it when he played against you guys. It's just you saw that the Seahawks were really trying because Russell Wilson was back, but they just couldn't make it happen. Ended up getting goose-egged out there in Lambeau. You drop a close one to Minnesota, and then but win a rematch against the Rams the week before. Then you go on the bye. Then the Sunday night game happens, and the Bears come into town. It's, you know, it's Lambeau, it's Sunday Night Football, which is legally mandated by the NFL now that this, any game taking place in Lambeau between the Bears and the Packers is on prime time. That's just it. Yep. 2019 playing at noon in Lambeau is an aberration, and that person who put that schedule out was fired. So anytime the Bears and Packers get together, it's legally mandated to be on prime time. And for a minute there, it really looked like it was going to be the Bears' night, you know, because special teams was such an issue. I mean, if there was a game where it really put the special teams, you know, gaffes or problems for the Packers on Front Street, it was that game. Their inability to stop anybody who was returning the football. The Bears had excellent field position, like 80% of the night, and then giving up the punt return to Jakeem Grant when you had him dead to rights inside his own like, who returns the ball from inside the 5 yard line on a punt return? Well, Jakeem Grant did. 97 yards later, it's a touchdown, and things like that. But again, the Bears, being the Bears, decided to take their foot off the gas just before halftime, allow that one touchdown to Devontae Adams on that one to narrow the gap, and then the second half was all Green Bay.
Yeah, that it was funny because the special teams found a different way to blow things every week. That was the biggest issue, right? In this game, it was the coverage units that were just a complete mess.
I remember when they tackled somebody on a kickoff return that the crowd went nuts.
Yep.
You know, like, oh my God, they flipped out. Hey, we stopped. He didn't score. We're great. You know, it was the funniest thing. That, you know, when they tackled the kick returner, the crowd had like a standing ovation for the special teams unit. Like, that's how bad it was.
But with, you know, with that unit, it was like the coordinators playing whack-a-mole, right? You finally, you know, the next game, they kind of figure out the coverage issues a little bit. But then now you've got, field goal block, blocking issues, and you're getting kicks blocked and things. And it just always felt like it was a different issue every game, and they could never, you know, figure out what the hell was going on that side of the ball. And, that led to being a one and done season for Drayton as the special teams coordinator.
Right. So you get the win against the Bears, you eke one out against the, Ravens, you beat the Browns, and, then the Vikings on Sunday Night Football, Week 17, and then rest everybody Week 18, and let one go for the Lions to finish 13 and 4. So you got your 13. You decided to call it a day after that. Like, hey, third year in a row, 13 wins. Ah, let the Lions have this one. They've won 2 games so far. Let them have number 3. So we go to the divisional round. Green Bay is the one and only team in the NFC that had the bye. The 49ers come to town, and once again, I mean, it's an early exit for Green Bay. I can't tell you that I hated it, Evan. I really didn't.
I wouldn't expect you to.
Especially with the guy that put it through the uprights there at the end. But it was really, as a football fan, and I'm sure you can feel this 1,000 times amplified, it was frustrating watching Green Bay out there that day. For them to run it right down the field, opening drive, 7 points on the board. I'm like, okay, well, this is how this is going to go. And then you don't see the end zone again for the rest of the game. You only manage 10 points, and special teams was your undoing. You had the field goal from Robbie Gould, but not to mention the blocked pick six, or kick six, if you will, prior that really blew the whole thing wide open. Because, again, the defense was amazing. But, you know, the difference in the game was that block punt, because that was the only touchdown the 49ers scored in the whole game.
Yeah. The defense was responsible, again, for 6 points, and one of those came off of great field position, I think, off a blocked field goal, too. Mm-hmm. So it really felt like the whole tenor of that game changed in the middle of the first quarter when, like you said, the Packers drove straight down the field, scored a touchdown with ease. They're driving down again after getting a stop, and they're on the 49ers side of the 50, and Mercedes Lewis, of all people, coughs up a football and loses a fumble, and the 49ers pounce on it. And after that moment, the offense just looked completely out of sync. Rodgers looked like he was totally off. I don't know if he was pressing. I don't know, you know, what in the world was going on there. But the whole offense just completely fell apart after that fumble on that second drive, and basically could do absolutely nothing. And again, like you said, the defense was incredible in that game. Tell you what, Rashawn Gary was amazing in that game, and he is finally starting to get a little bit of hype for the great season he had last year. So keep an eye on him, you know, for a real big breakout this season. But and again, what more do you say about the special teams other than, you know, that is the reason, even with the offensive struggles, that the Packers didn't go to the NFC Championship game. And this one's so frustrating to me too, because we all, like everybody on staff at Acme Packing Company, was like, we want anybody but the 49ers coming in for this game. And Mike McCarthy screws us over again.
Gift wrapped them for
terrible
you guys,
clock
man.
Management in the wild card game against San Francisco. You know, stealing a chance to for Dallas to win that game. That one hurts, and to then see that the Rams would, you know, beat Tampa, go on to the NFC Championship game, having the Packers having beaten the Rams at Lambeau a couple weeks earlier. Mm-hmm. The Rams come to Green Bay. The Packers are making it through the Super Bowl. I fully stand by that. I fully believe that. There was nothing about that team that really scared me that I didn't think the Packers could match up well with. It's just there's something weird about Shanahan and the way he. I don't know, and I can't even really say that it's Shanahan in that game, right? I mean, it was self-inflicted wounds on offense and on special teams that handed them that game. So, what are you going to do? And then, we go into the offseason, and now it's the Willie won't he game with Rodgers again.
Right. I was just about to say, then the drama really began. It's like you guys making an unceremonious exit in the divisional round, which was probably one of the best weekends of football I've ever seen in my life with like all 4 of those games that weekend were outstanding.
So I got to tell you, I was actually on vacation in Hawaii that weekend, and I'm sitting here like we were going out from because the Packers had the night game, I think.
Yeah.
So at that point, it was, you know, it kicks off early afternoon, like Hawaii time. We're on the Big Island. We're going out for some to do like sunset photos and stuff because we do some amateur photography. And so I watched the first like quarter in the hotel room, and then I pulled it up on my phone the whole rest of the time. Mm. And here we are sitting on this, you know, gorgeous beach on the west coast of the Big Island of Hawaii, or east coast of the Big Island of Hawaii. And I'm just miserable.
Yeah.
Watching this whole thing play out in the fourth quarter, of that game, and just watching it slip away. I literally, when the punt got blocked and recovered for a touchdown, I think I walked about a half a mile down the beach from my fiance and from the people we were with. And I just needed to get away from humanity for about a half an hour before I could come back.
I got to ask Evan, whose idea was the trip that particular weekend?
Well, so it was based around a photography workshop that we were doing. So it was a set schedule. And look, the guy who ran the workshop was also a Packers fan, was also from Wisconsin. So okay. we were spending most of that afternoon, you know, keeping each other apprised of what was going on.
Drinking heavily afterward, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a rough one. So,
yeah. So, like I said, we move into the off season where things really get interesting with the Rodgers saga, because it's, you know, half of it's he's going to retire. The other half, will he sign an extension, or can the Packers afford him? Or will they move the necessary mountains like the Rams do to just magically create cap space or somehow fit these mega contracts under the salary cap and whatnot? And to go along with the madness that was March for the NFL, I mean, it was just like there was this amazing NCAA tournament taking place, and that was completely overshadowed by free agency and the beginning of the offseason of the new calendar year for the NFL with all of the crazy quarterback trades. Aaron Rodgers, you know, finally answers our question, signs a $50 million a year contract with the Packers, only to have like 24 hours they trade his favorite weapon to the Raiders. I mean, talk about a roller coaster for you guys. Yes, we're keeping Rodgers, but what the hell, Devontae's gone.
Yeah, that was a shock, because everybody assumed when the news broke about Rodgers that okay, cool, we are, you know, we're good, the band's coming back together for, you know, for the real last dance in 22. And then yeah, then the other shoe drops, and Adams is gone, and here we are, you know, left wondering who the hell is going to catch footballs from Rodgers this season.
Right.
So, but yeah, I mean, so much of that, the stuff Adams, there's a lot of reality to the idea that he wanted to play with Derek Carr, mm-hmm. because those two were teammates, right? Yeah, I mean, they were. Yeah, they played together for a couple of years at Fresno State. They're still really good friends. Adams is a Bay Area guy. Vegas is obviously a lot closer to there than Green Bay is, and he's got family, I guess, who doesn't really travel, doesn't fly, so he can't see his family as often as he'd like. Now he can do that a little bit better in Vegas. That all kind of, I think, played into it. And I think he was also, you know, I think there was a little bit of, you know, weirdness with the relationship with the Packers front office. I don't know if it was, you know, to the extent that the Rodgers stuff was allegedly last offseason, but there was probably still a little bit of, you know, awkwardness there too that kind of played into it. So all of those things combined, and look, the Raiders, you know, ponied up a first round and a second round pick. Yeah. And fundamentally, right, like the Packers could have not gotten anything for Adams because his contract was up. They had to franchise tag him to even keep him around and get anything for him. So, you know, if that was a case where they knew he wanted out and he was not going to play another down for Green Bay, then they did it right. You know,
yeah.
They got a couple of high value draft picks for him. You know, managed to send him to a place, you know, outside the division in the AFC even. And, you know, I think it ends up being as good of an outcome as it could be if you would, you know, take the assumption that Adams was not going to play for Green Bay ever again.
So looking at the free agent period after the, you know, the storm subsides, that is the re-signing of the euphoria of re-signing Rodgers, or the relief, if you want, And then the chaos that ensued of, you know, trading away Davante Adams right on top of that. Apparently the answer to who he's going to be throwing footballs to is Sammy Watkins.
Yeah.
who's on a one-year, like, veteran minimum prove-it deal after stealing money from Kansas City and Baltimore the last few years. I mean, is this somebody you guys are hoping, like, is the second coming of Charles Woodson as, like, here's some cast-off that nobody wants anymore but's going to have a second life in Green Bay?
I mean, look, that's if that happens, awesome. Yeah. I don't think anybody's expecting anything like that from Watkins. There's been a lot of talk from the coaching staff this spring about, you know, really liking what he brings to the team and his attitude and everything, and he apparently is fully healthy, which is great. But honestly, with the contract, he's still got to earn a roster spot first in training camp, and then we can worry about, you know, where he's going to go from there. Yeah. Alan Lazard is still probably going to be your number one guy. You've got Randall Cobb still back as a slot receiver. I thought Cobb was going to get cut for cap purposes, but they were able to work out a pay cut for him to keep him around for this season and keep his cap hit down. So Rodgers kind of has his third down security blanket and Bear Killer and Randall Cobb back for another season. Right. So, yeah. But yeah, outside of those three guys, there's nothing that we really know about. And we don't really even know what Watkins can do at this stage of his career. So, that room is full of unknowns and there's talent there. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But nobody has any idea what, you know, what a lot of these guys are really going to be able to do in 2022.
Welcome to Chicago, my friend. That is exactly what Ryan Poles has turned our wide receiver room into.
I would still take the Packers receiver room in a heartbeat over the Bears at this point. And it's not close.
So, I mean, Watkins is the only guy that you signed. As you mentioned before, Rasul Douglas was able to turn that, hey, we'll take you off the practice squad where you're making a couple of grand a week, and now here's 3 years and $21 million, over that. You still are punter. That was nice.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You got Pat O'Donnell, and you re-sign Robert Tonyan. You bring in Jerron Reed from the Chiefs. And then I see, is it Kayson Dixon from the Raiders? Him over. But it's like,
and then Devondre Campbell is the other one, the other big one, re-signing him after his all-pro season on the one-year, basically, vetmin deal last year. So,
but the list that I find more interesting, that makes me wonder about how, you know, like, the Packers are still the Packers, but no Za'Darius Smith, Marquez Valdes-Scantling is gone. You know, Lucas Patrick wasn't exactly a starter for you guys, but he was a key cog, if you will. Oren Burks is gone. Corey Baroquez, which is why you guys stole our punter, decided to go off to the Browns. And then, of course, Equanimeous St. Brown, not Rodgers' favorite target, but he's in Chicago now. So it's like a lot of guys that you heard a lot about from their time in Green Bay are off elsewhere. But when you have a quarterback worth $50 million a year, that kind of thing's going to happen.
Yeah, for sure. And a lot of those departures, you know, aside from really Adams, I mean, Adams and Valdes-Scantling, those are the two guys who were the really big components, right? A lot of these guys have played a lot of snaps, but Za'Darius basically didn't play at all last season with the back issues that he had. So I think he played one game in the regular season and he suited up for the playoff game. So that was purely a salary cap saving move. I think they saved like $16 million in cap space by cutting him this year. So based on getting nothing out of him last year, that was a no-brainer move. And especially with the ascent of Rashawn Gary again that I mentioned. And so there are big names in there, but the contributions they actually made to the 2021 team, aside from, again, the two big receivers, really not that much that they contributed to the team's success last season.
So let's move on to the draft, because this is where Green Bay kind of turned it around as far as their offseason, from the, you know, from, like I said, the relief of re-signing Rodgers to the madness of trading away Devontae, and then, you know, like you're less than inspiring free agent, you know, class coming in. you move on to the draft where you can start using some of these assets you got for Devontae Adams. And the first one off the board is Quay Walker, the inside linebacker from Georgia. And then you double down on Bulldogs, which had the best defense in college football last year, and Devontae Wyatt, the defensive tackle. Those were your two first-round picks this year.
Yeah, this really was a signal that the Packers are moving into a different phase, right? That that they're going to be focusing a little more on the run game and the defense, and trying to build up the rest of that roster around Rodgers and take some of the pressure off of him. Defensively, both of these guys, I think, are going to really strengthen the middle of this defense. Wyatt's going to probably give Kenny Clark his best running mate ever since Clark showed up in Green Bay in 2016, just from a pure talent standpoint and an athleticism standpoint, right? If we didn't have Jordan Davis, the other Georgia tackle, just absolutely destroy the combine this year, a lot more people, I think, would have been talking about Wyatt's workout, because he was every bit the athlete that Jordan Davis was, just, you know, about 50 pounds lighter. But I think he's a guy who a lot of us kind of had projected as a potential Packers pick in the first round, just because I think he'll be a great fit at the three tech next to Kenny Clark. And I think we'll see a little more, you know, of back of the two down linemen nickel. The Packers used a lot of like three down linemen and then three linebackers, so two outside linebackers, one off-ball linebacker with Campbell last year. Mm-hmm. I think with Walker, you're going to see a lot more of like a standard 2-4-5 nickel with two down linemen, two edge rushers, two linebackers, and then five DBs, and probably going to be Wyatt and Kenny Clark as the down linemen in those formations. So this, I think, unlocks a little bit of versatility for Joe Barry in this defense in terms of what he can do with some of the personnel on that front seven.
And then to answer, you know, who Aaron Rodgers is going to be throwing passes to, you answer that immediately I don't know what the hell was wrong with Detroit making all kinds of deals with division teams to move up and down the board in the draft, but they make the trade with Minnesota to move up, like with the Rams pick at 32, they move up to 12 to take Jameson Williams.
Yep.
Something like that. Yeah. The wide receiver out of Alabama. And then they trade back in the second round with you guys, and you get Christian Wilson, somebody that was widely mocked to land at the Bears at 39. Was it 39 with our first? Yeah, 39 was our first pick. A lot of people were mocking him to us at 39 and said, you take him off the board at 34.
Yeah, the Watson trade was really interesting because all the reports, because Minnesota's sitting there with 32 and 34, right? Packers wanted to get to 32 and get him at the end of the first round, and Minnesota's like, nope, we don't want you to get a chance to use a fifth round or fifth year option on this guy. So come back and talk to us tomorrow in the second round. And they made basically the exact same trade, both of their second round picks, the one the Packers originally had, and then the one they got from the Raiders in the Adams trade, to move all the way up to 34 and get Watson. He's got
boomer bust potential. I mean, he could really be something special, or he can be like, why did we waste two second round picks on this guy?
He's got maybe one of the best workouts at the combine since like a Julio Jones or a Calvin Johnson. And he's got that kind of size too. I mean, yeah. He's 6'4" and a half, 6'5". He's not as thick as either of those two guys are, but I think he can certainly bulk up a little bit. But the big question for him, right, is playing at North Dakota State, the competition, and the fact that North Dakota State has a very run heavy offense. So yeah. he played less than half of the Bison's offensive snaps last year, which is very unusual for a guy, you know, take an early second round. They're betting on upside. They're betting on athleticism. There's just probably going to be some growing pains with him and kind of adjusting to the NFL and then adjusting to Rodgers, who is famously very demanding of his wide receivers.
Right.
But yeah, the potential is absolutely sky high with him.
I mean, but because that's what the discussion was as far as him landing in Chicago at 39, which was, you know, it's like, man, this guy's got great tools. He's got great size. He's got a catch radius that is out of this world. But he drops passes. He's not exactly the most efficient route runner. He's played at low-level talent and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, he could run into a brick wall in the NFL when he's going up against NFL guys. and things like that. So it was just, it was such an interesting discussion listening to people, you know, kind of talking into existence that he would be a Bear, and then other ones trying to talk it out of existence because they were more paranoid about the downside of what he could be and, you know, what we did and didn't see during his college days. So, you know, him landing in Green Bay is probably the perfect place for him. As far as, you know, you have Rodgers, you know what you're going to get from Rodgers, and it's just a matter of, you know, like you said, how demanding he is of his receivers, how he handles that, how he handles being a little bit light in the ass for an NFL, for a guy his size, you know. You know, that's one of probably one of the reasons why he was 1AA as opposed to, you know, top five or whatever in the NFL.
Yeah, he was definitely a late bloomer physically, but honestly, we had a lot of the same types of discussions among Packers fans about Watson, especially once that, you know, with that 28th pick. There were a lot of mock drafts that had him going to Green Bay in that range. And, you know, I was very much a proponent of, look, if he falls to you in the second round with one of those picks in the 50s, you know, even if you want to move up into maybe like the mid 40s or something, if he's there, I can understand it. I thought the price that they paid to, you know, both of those second round picks to get him felt a little high.
Yeah.
To me, but I mean, I've come around again on the tools. They're obvious. The flashes are there, and at this point, right? Like you pay for projection in the NFL draft, and so you know there's nobody that projects with a higher ceiling among receivers in this class than Watson. So I get it.
Yeah, the other options. Well, I remember I was talking to you during the offseason. It's like, please just don't draft Chris Olave. Just please don't draft. Because the last thing that I need is Justin Fields' favorite college target kicking our ass twice a year. It's like, I don't need that. So please stay away from Chris Olave. Don't use those two first-round picks to move up and take him. I would appreciate that so much. Thank you.
Well, and it was funny the way the board went down, right? I mean, you get to about seven, and there's no receivers off the board, and you know, Packers fans are kind of thinking, ooh, okay, you know, 22, we could maybe move up into the mid-teens or something if like Olave falls, or even if like a Garrett Wilson or Jameson Williams fall. You know, that's a range where you can move up, maybe move your third-round pick to move up from 22 to like 15, 16.
Yeah, and then like four boom, of the next six picks.
Four of the next receiver. Five picks. Yeah, London goes, Wilson goes, Olave goes, Jameson goes, and it's like, well, okay, crap. I guess we're on to like tier two here.
Yeah.
And it was just interesting to see how they decided to handle that. Go on defense then with both first rounders, and then again moving up for Watson as kind of, I don't know if that was a backup option for them. Maybe that was kind of what they had in mind the whole time, but who knows.
Then the other day two pick was Sean Ryan, a guard out of UCLA, to kind of replace some of the depth you guys lost during the offseason. Yep. For some reason, I feel like the name Romeo Doubs is a name I'm going to hear a lot out of Green Bay, because it's another one of these day three receivers that I'm sure is going to be a pain in the ass, not only for the Bears, but for everybody else who has to play Green Bay. I know nothing about the kid. I just know that the history of the Packers says these day three receivers with these funny names are going to be out there doing damage because Rodgers can get them the ball.
Well, I'll tell you, Doubs was a guy who, when we got to day three, I had his name circled from the very get-go as this is the guy I want, because you got to figure, right, this team needed two to three receivers in this draft. Watson couldn't really be the only guy that they brought in just because they need bodies as much as anything else.
Sure.
And based on who was left after round three, Doubs was the guy that I think I liked the best, really, that was still left. He came from like a run-and-shoot offense in Nevada, so his route tree isn't kind of where it needs to be at the NFL level. But I think he also suffered from a little bit of an injury during training, and he didn't work out at the combine, so that might have slipped him down boards a little bit. But the guy had back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons the last 2 years. He scored 20 touchdowns combined the last 2 years. He's got good deep speed. You can take the top off a little bit, and he's tough over the middle. I mean, he is willing to go over the middle, take a shot, and make some tough catches. So I think that's gonna endear him a little bit to Rodgers. And I don't know how much he contributes as a rookie, but I mean, he's certainly making the roster, and I think you can probably put him out there on special teams with, you know, he's got enough speed. He can contribute there as a rookie and work his way into the rotation on offense, you know, in maybe year two, and really carve out a nice role, I think, as a complimentary receiver to hopefully as a good compliment to Watson.
And then to wrap up the back half of the draft, because you guys have, what, 10 picks this year. Those were the top five there. The bottom five, Zach Tom, a guard out of Wake Forest, Kingsley and Engabare?
Enigbare.
Yeah. There's a few syllables in there. Linebacker out of South Carolina, Tariq Carpenter, another linebacker, Georgia Tech, Jonathan Ford, a D-tackle out of Miami, Rasheed Walker, thanks for making that one easy on me, offensive tackle out of Penn State, and then Samari Toure, a wide receiver out of Nebraska on the back end. Was he Mr. Irrelevant, or was there one after?
Not quite. I think there was a couple couple guys that went after him.
258. But that's way up there as far as as far as that goes. But you know, wide receiver from Nebraska, the last to come off the board for Green Bay. Looking for anything out of these back five guys here?
Yeah, I mean, Tom, I think, can be a backup on day one. He's probably going to back up at center and might even back up like right tackle, because he played both of those both tackle and center at college at Wake Forest. He is maybe the most prototypical Packers offensive line pick since they took John Runyon a couple years ago. He absolutely hits every one of their trends in terms of testing for offensive linemen on day three picks. They've got very consistent targets that they look for on these guys' agility times and height, and especially having experience playing left tackle, playing blindside tackle is something they look for too. So I think you could see him, you know, he's probably going to be the backup center, probably backs up at guard. I don't know if he plays, you know, he might be thrust into a spot starting role this year. He'll need to put on a little bit of weight and some strength, but I think he's another guy who a year or two down the road, you could very well see him as a starter on this offensive line. As far as Enigbare goes, I think he's going to be a good rotational player. I think he fell a little bit for, I'm not really sure why he slipped in the draft. I mean, I saw a lot of people projecting him around, you know, end of round three, early round four. So we were pretty happy to find a little depth on the edge with him in the fifth round. And then of those seventh round guys, the last four, Toure, again, another receiver, but great testing. He absolutely lit it up at Montana before he transferred to Nebraska after the COVID year. Mm. So there's some... there's definitely some potential there, and he had some really big games the second half of the season for Nebraska. He had a big game against Wisconsin, who's obviously got a great defense, and against Ohio State late in the season. So look for him to, you know, try to compete for a special teams role early, especially if the Packers keep more than six receivers. I think he's got a really great shot of cracking the roster and, you know, maybe making some contributions here and there in the next couple of years.
And we made it through the draft without any Aaron Rodgers' unhappy news or anything like that being thrown in our faces, just to make draft weekend exciting / unbearable for those 3 days, because that's all anybody wanted to talk about whenever they had a free moment, like especially day three of the draft last year. Anytime that there was a free moment while they were, you know, running off the picks or whatever, it was always about, you know, where could Rodgers go? Who would be interested? Would somebody trade for him? You know, is it too late because the draft is practically over, as opposed to, you know, like any picks you trade would come off next year and the years after, kind of thing. And, you know, none of that. We already had that nipped in the bud, even with Davante Adams being shipped off and things like that. All of the Green Bay drama was kind of out of the way at the time.
Thank goodness.
Fast forward to yesterday.
Oh, my gosh.
And, you know, we – well, real quick, before we get to that, you addressed the special teams by Rich Biasaccia. That's how you say it, right?
Biasaccia.
Who was the interim head coach that took the Raiders to a playoff berth after the whole nonsense with Gruden having to pay for 10-year-old emails. Like, I get what he was saying was not cool. And, you know, obviously you don't want – anybody, but it was 10 years ago. I just, if not more, wasn't it like 06 or something like that? Crazy that those emails.
Yeah. Yeah. I think from what I remember, there was a period of time where they pulled a handful of those from, but yeah, that was a while back.
But I mean, anyway, despite all that, he's gone. Bisaccia takes him to the playoffs. They lose to the eventual AFC East champion. Gave him a hell of a run at it at the same time. And he had some choices about where he could go, because there was actually, some talk about how he might end up in Chicago. But yeah, instead, he goes to Green Bay, and one of the more widely touted, like the other Dave Tobe, if you will, as far as like being the guy that you want running your special teams unit, lands in Green Bay after they have their worst season as a special teams unit in quite some time.
We will settle for basic competence at this point from our special teams unit. That basic competence is going to be such a light years size improvement from what we had last season that, if he can get to that level, you know, we'll be ecstatic. And it's the Packers finally, after years and years and years of this, opened up the checkbook for a special teams coordinator. a couple years ago when LaFleur was hired, he wanted to bring in Darren Rizzi, who I think came from either Miami or New Orleans, ended up in the other place. But you know, he really wanted to hire him as the special teams coordinator when he was putting together his first staff, and essentially the Packers wouldn't pay up his asking price. And they've paid for it the last 3 years. They've had two different coordinators. Neither one of them has done anything with those units. And so I think Bisaccia brings a totally different approach, a different attitude to that role. He's, from everything that we hear, right, he's a hard ass, but he's a hard ass who gets guys to trust him, to believe in him, and to play hard for him. Mm-hmm. And that's a very different attitude than the Packers have had in that position the last couple of years. Maurice Drayton, last year's coordinator, seemed like a really good guy, seemed like a good teacher. It just didn't work out. And I do think there's some value to shaking up the approach and shaking up the attitude, especially at that spot where so much of special teams is, you know, there's some technique there, but a lot of it is just effort and want to. And I think, you know, there's a good chance that Bisaccia really, you know, can at least make a drastic improvement, which again, to this point, would be basic competence.
Well, I mean, that's the thing about special teams coordinators, why some of them get shots at being head coach, is because they are basically managing the entire roster, because they're taking the guys that the other coordinators don't want to run a unit that nobody really wants to play on. I mean, there are so few guys that take pride in playing special teams. Most of them look at it as some kind of punishment or demotion, or, you know, very few of them look at it as a route to a career, or, you know, maybe if I shine here, like, you know, the first one that pops in my mind, like Terrell Davis, you know, makes an amazing hit his rookie year on a special teams unit. Next thing you know, he's a starting running back for the Broncos. Now he's got a golden jacket because he's a Hall of Famer kind of thing. Very few people look at it as a, you know, what's the word? Springboard to something bigger to getting a bigger role or getting another look from the team and things. So being able to motivate guys to play a position or playing on in a phase of the team that nobody wants to play on, doesn't get a whole lot of love, you know, that kind of thing, is not an easy job to do.
Definitely. Yeah. So we're certainly looking forward to seeing what he brings on that, in that phase of the of football. And, you know, hopefully we'll get some pretty substantial changes in the execution when it comes down to it this year. Cause it was like I said, myriad issues that were problems. There was some effort issues. There were just technique and, you know, assignment issues. I mean, everything that could go wrong on special teams went wrong at some point for the Packers last year.
Right. Yeah. And that was the thing about it. It wasn't just the one thing that killed you. It was different things in different games that were hurting you in different, you know, all kinds of ways. And then it all just kind of came together in one ugly package in that divisional game against the 49ers. You know, the coverage issues, you're getting kicks blocked, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it ended up being your death knell in that game. You know, with the block punt being returned for a touchdown, that was the difference in the game. So without that, the defense wins the game 10-6, as opposed to what you know how it all went down.
You just you're really enjoying twisting that knife, aren't
little
you?
Little bits. You know, I mean, we got to take our wins where we can as Bear fans, because I don't know. I mean, I talked to Jeremy Reisman about this last night when it's like the thing that's been tough about the talking heads and the analysts all of a sudden in love with the idea about the Bears being the worst team in the league is that I don't know if they're wrong, because we don't know what we have. We don't know what we're going to put out there as far as the offense, because we got a brand new guy calling plays for the first time. Will that work? A rookie head coach, rookie offensive coordinator in Getsy. I mean, you know Getsy, but
I was just going to say, we haven't even talked about him jumping ship over to Chicago.
We'll get to that. But it's just, you know, Getsy calling plays for the first time. Alan Williams calling defense for the first time, because our head coach, thankfully, isn't going to call plays. He's going to coach the football team, which is music to every Bear fan's ears after 4 years of Nagy having no idea how to run a football team. And, you know, the guys that, I mean, with Ryan Pace leaving the cupboard bare as far as cap space and draft picks, there wasn't a whole lot of maneuvering that Ryan Poles could do. He had to bring in a bunch of guys on prove-it deals who want to get more contracts and take advantage of the Bears and their $100 million in cap space in 2023. So we don't know what we have, you know, along with the draft picks. Are these guys going to work out? You know, all the jokes about Velus Jones being 48 years old and, you know, things like that. You know, it's just the draft, not drafting an offensive lineman until like the fifth round, and then we drafted five of them, you know, that kind of thing. It's just like, okay, I don't know if the Bears are going to be the worst team in the NFL. What's driving me nuts is that I can't really say yes or no about it, and I'm just waiting for the season to start so we can answer the question. Is 2022 going to be a tough year before we can try to close the gap in 2023, going out there using some of that money to bring in some big-name talent that's going to help us, you know, gain ground on everybody else? Or are we going to surprise some people and this thing works out a hell of a lot better than anybody thought? I can't wait to find out. But while these guys are saying it, I really don't have the ammunition to say otherwise, and that's what's frustrating right now. Yeah. So
makes sense.
Anyway, before we get to the Getsy, before we get to the schedule, let's go ahead and get it out of the way.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on the tattoo. I mean, what the hell is that thing, man?
So I said he revealed his tattoo on the same day that Disney announced that they're coming out with
the National Treasure series. That's what it was. Series. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm just like, all right, there's something's going on here. This can't be a coincidence, because that absolutely looks like a map to the,
you could easily turn that into an episode or something, or a series arc for the season, just deciphering the symbols in that tattoo to lead you to the treasure.
Yeah, there's going to be some sort of, you know, hidden gold underneath Lambeau Field or something. We're going to find out 5 years from now. So,
I mean,
I don't know.
He just keeps finding ways to top what he did last time. I didn't think he could really outdo. I'm immunized, vaccinated. I really didn't think that was possible. And then the tattoo comes out. I mean, and it's just weirder than that, you know, just kind of misleading people with the whole I'm immunized, not vaccinated. That whole thing. But then the tattoo comes out. There's lions. One of them's, you know, growling at the other. The other one's just kind of chilling there. You've got constellations. You've got zodiac symbols. You have circles and lines everywhere. There's a picture of the ocean, I'm guessing, and then some weird symbols at the bottom. And it's just like, this is a lot to take in, man. Jesus Christ. I mean, what were your thoughts when you saw it?
I literally just shook my head and I'm like, you know what, with everything that's happened in the last, you know, year and change, this makes sense. This doesn't even surprise me at this point.
That's the thing. It's like, yeah, that checks out. The way this guy's been acting lately, that makes, like you said, that checks out. That makes total. It would make more sense if he and Woodley were still together, I think. But now that he's riding solo,
Yeah,
it makes it just even a little bit weirder.
There's some talk about him having a new woman in his life who is a little more out there than Shailene Woodley was. So, I who knows? But what are you gonna do?
Yeah,
it's at this point. I mean, the funny thing was last offseason when all the drama was going on, Mark Murphy, the Packers president and CEO, took a lot of flack for a comment he made saying that Rodgers was a complicated fella. And I think in hindsight, like, he was that was the best possible description of Aaron Rodgers that you could get.
Yeah. Yeah. We've kind of always known that about him, but he's really laid it on pretty thick the last few years.
He's making no secrets about who he is.
Yeah, so I mean, that's what you tend to do when you get older. But you know, you tend not to care so much about what people think. But when you're a public figure and one in the spotlight of an Aaron Rodgers, probably want to hang on to that until your playing days are over. You know, instead of when you're out there in the forefront. Like that. But, hey, man, it's his life, and that's the tattoo that we're going to be seeing on every broadcast this season. So I hope you like the tattoo, because you're going to be seeing plenty of it for the next 17 to 20 games based on how the season works out for you guys. So
look, I'm just hoping for a lot of cold weather so he wears sleeves a lot this season.
All right, so let's talk about the schedule, and then we'll wrap up with Luke Getsy. You know, on the road at Minnesota to start week one, and then the legally mandated Sunday night football appearance by the Bears at Lambeau Field week two, at Tampa Bay for week three, which I guess is just going to be one of those late start game of the week type things, because it's not a national TV game, then home for the Patriots for the first 4 weeks. So an interesting start. I mean, the Vikings, not exactly a team that really scares anybody, but they've always given the Packers hell, and that's how you start the season. Then you've got the Bears week two on Sunday Night Football. Then the Buccaneers and, you know, good old Tom Brady that retired for a cup of coffee and decided to come back. And then the Patriots with the ascending Mac Jones, and how will he be year number two?
Yeah, it's a weird first month. Week one, again, we talked about it for the way it went down last season with that Saints game. Weird crap always happens in week one, so I'm trying not to take anything for granted there. But the one that really kind of irritates me is having to have a trip down to Florida in September.
Yeah.
Because that's never fun, and the Packers have had struggles in Florida the last couple of years anyway. Again, that Saints game, for example, crazy hot weather, you know, in Jacksonville for that game in week one. I'm just hoping that, you know, maybe it's unseasonably warm or something, and maybe they've, you know, figured out some sort of solution for their crappy turf at Raymond James Stadium by then. But not holding my breath. So
yeah, I've been to Tampa, Florida. I've only been there once. It was 21 years ago now, just after 9/11, actually November of 2001. My alma mater, Western Illinois, playing at South Florida, and they played their home games in Raymond James Stadium, and in mid-November it was 85 and unbearably humid. It's like, I'm never coming to Florida ever again. I will never come. Because if this is how it's like in my favorite time of the year, fall. I love the fall. I love the weather, you know, all that kind of stuff. If this is what fall is like, I can't imagine what summer must be like down here.
Yeah, so, my only football experience in Tampa, Wisconsin played in the Outback Bowl at Raymond James in roughly 2007-2008. And January 1st bowl game, and even that one was, you know, 78 degrees or so, something like that, and you know, warm and pretty humid. So
yeah, that's the thing. Could be the humidity is what makes it unbearable. Like 85, okay, nice departure from the 40-degree weather we left behind in Illinois, but the humidity? Screw this, man. I'm staying inside. Let me know when the bus leaves for the stadium. I'm not coming out. So,
yep.
Met a Hall of Famer that day, though.
There you go.
Leroy Selman.
Nice.
First ever draft pick by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in '76. And, like I said, a Hall of Famer as well. Second quarter of the season, first trip, a quote-unquote home game against the Giants in the UK.
Yeah.
So that awesome 8:30 a.m. Game, if you want to get up at the crack of dawn to watch the Packers kick the crap out of the Giants. Then you come home for an actual home game against the Jets, then at the Washington Commanders, which is still taking some getting used to. Then Sunday Night Football on the road at Buffalo to close out the second quarter.
Yeah, I thought the biggest thing that surprised me here was that the Packers didn't take the bye week immediately after the London game in week six. That one shocked me. We all knew that they were getting a London game for some time. They were the last team that had not played over in London at some point in the last, whatever, 15 years since they started doing
this. That's why it feels weird. I was like, the Packers are going? It's like, I didn't realize they hadn't been over there.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep, it's their first time playing over there. And so this being the first year that they've got the 9 home games with the 17-game schedule, the NFL basically drafted them and said, yep, you're going. This is happening. They apparently had the option of the league asked them, do you want the bye after the London game? They said, no, we don't. We'd rather have it later on in the season, which surprised me. That's going to be a rough stretch because that's a lot of travel. Going to London and back, coming home, then going back east a couple times in back-to-back weeks. So that'll be an interesting stretch. And that Packers-Bills game, that Sunday night game, that's going to be a good one.
Yeah,
I really think that's every bit deserving of that time slot. And it should be really interesting to see the first time that Aaron Rodgers and Josh Allen will square off, with Josh Allen actually being good, because the only other time they've played each other, I think, was Allen's rookie year when
2018
still had no idea what he was doing. That'll be fun. That'll be a fun one.
For sure. That's going to be an interesting weekend for me, because you have that game, which I'm looking forward to, and then that's the week that the Cowboys and the Bears play. It'd be interesting. For some reason, I've always enjoyed Bears-Cowboys games, and this one is going to be in Dallas, and the Bears travel notoriously well. And the last couple of times that we've been down there, I think we lost the last time we went down there, but it was like Chicago South down there as far as like crowd reaction in the game. It was like the Bear fans went in there and just took the place over.
Packers fans have done that in AT&T Stadium too a couple times. So yeah, that's great.
You know, when you give 90,000 seats to fill up, and you have the Bears and the Packers coming to town. Uh-huh. Chances are it's going to be a lot of green and a lot of navy blue in those stands if you're not careful. So, but speaking of the Cowboys, after Buffalo, you're on the road at Detroit. 3 road games in a row there, at Washington, at Buffalo, and then at Detroit to start November. Then you're home for Dallas, and then the quick turnaround, Thursday night against Tennessee. And depending on the football team that Tennessee turns out to be, like, will they be who they were last year, that dominant, good defense, solid running game, but God help us, our quarterback is killing us, or will they just fall apart because Ryan Tannehill is just not living up to that contract anymore? That could be a hell of a 5-day stretch for you guys. Dallas at home, and then, Thursday night against the Titans. That could be rough.
Yeah, the fortunate thing is both of those games are home games, so at least there's no travel involved with those two. But doing that, coming off of a, like you said, a 3 straight road game stretch, which I think the Packers haven't had 3 road games in a row in like 6 or 7 years, something like that. It's been a long time. That's going to be a tough one. I mean, this is also, that Cowboys game is Mike McCarthy's first time coaching against the Packers, and certainly first time in Green Bay again in Lambeau.
And this is not going to be a triumphant return for this guy. I mean, talk about somebody who kind of wore out his welcome at the end there in Green Bay, and then after him setting you guys up for the one playoff opponent you didn't want coming into town, it's like, nobody's gonna be, like Mike McCarthy Boulevard might be torn off the street signs, out there before he gets to come back.
Yeah, that's there's gonna be all the storylines, all the takes flying, hot and heavy before that one. So, but yeah, I mean that Packers Titans game, that's a matchup of last year's number one seeds in right. both conferences, right? And they're putting that on a Thursday night. They really want to pump the Amazon Thursday night schedule this year.
You're also seeing a lot better matchups on Monday night as well to kind of give, mm-hmm. you know, something worthy of Buck and Ankman taking over on ESPN. So I think it's a good thing because how many times have you checked in on, you know, the Browns and, you know, and whatever random team they've been thrown on Monday night, you know, hey, Browns Jets, can't wait to watch that one. Like, no, thanks. I think I'll watch Raw or something like that. That'll be more entertaining than watching football, you know, with these two guys over here. But then after the Titans, you're back out on the road again at Philly and then coming to Soldier Field December 4th to wrap up the season series. Hopefully Rodgers will not be telling our fans that he still owns us at the end of this one. Before the week 14 bye, same one that the Bears have this year. So, you know, instead of the week six, you want it later in the year. Well, you got the absolute latest one, week 14, before the, you know, a final four game stretch. Speaking of Monday night, home for the Rams Monday night, then the main event on Christmas night against the Dolphins in Miami. Hopefully it won't be too awful down there.
Yeah.
Then home for Minnesota, home for Detroit. You guys play in Detroit at the end of the year. Who would have thought that, huh?
Yeah, go figure.
So,
oh my gosh.
They still gave us Minnesota again, but they flipped it this year. I could not believe it. We're not going to Minnesota. It's in Chicago this year. Well,
that's the same actually with Green Bay Detroit. We got that game in Green Bay this time. So, that's a nice little change of pace.
I was walking down the schedule, looking down the schedule, and I think our first matchup is week 5. In Minnesota, I was like, that's a typo. There's no way that, you know, because you look at it at a glance, like, okay, well, there's Minnesota at the bottom again. And then look, week 5 at Minnesota. Wait, so you scroll down. Week 18 in Chicago. Oh, is that right? So you go to the next site, you pull it. Nope, there it is. We're actually in Chicago this time. It's still Minnesota, but we flipped it. We're in Chicago. Chris Gates and I will talk about that quite a bit when I get him on the horn to preview that. Because, I mean, that's been the running joke. It's like this is literally like 7 out of the last 8 years that we're finishing with each other, which would be the same thing with you in Detroit.
Correct.
First time it's actually taking place in Chicago, as every other one has been in Minnesota. Every last one.
I think there was one of those Packers-Lions games that was in Green Bay. I think it was actually the one in... was it 2018? It was the year McCarthy got fired.
Wasn't that the Pat McAfee game? Where they kind of threw him in there to be the color guy, and he was
that. You might be right.
He went nuts when the kicker threw a touchdown pass or something like that.
Yeah, that does sound right. And that was one where Rodgers got concussed like in the middle of the first quarter or something, and Deshaun Kizer had to come in and play, and it was all sorts of ugly. So hopefully we'll have a little bit of a better experience this time around at Lambeau in week 18.
So looking at the schedule with the off season that you guys have had, what's the outlook looking like? I mean, do you think 13-4 again, or maybe you take a few hits and it's 11-6 this year, 10-7, because it's not exactly like anybody else is poised to run away with the division this year, because maybe you guys took a step back as far as some of the guys you lost or you know, with losing Devontae Adams, it's a pretty big hole to fill.
Yeah, I mean, it is a tough schedule, right? You've got, again, you've got Buffalo, you've got Tennessee, you got Tampa, the Rams, obviously, coming off the Super Bowl. I mean, those are all very tough games. You know, I figure the Packers probably end up being favored in something like 12 to 13 games this year. Mm-hmm. But something like an 11-6, 12-5 seems about right to me. I don't think they get to 13 again. Mm-hmm. I just don't think that happens with the way the travel schedule breaks down a little bit with the bye week. I think this is a team that they probably drop one here somewhere that just kind of leaves your head scratching for whatever reason, whether that's injury or again, like something weird with travel or something. So, but again, I think this is still definitely in my eyes, this is a double digit win team, a team that should win the NFC North this season, at least. Mm-hmm. And then once you get into the postseason, I mean, We've seen it many times that, you know, anything can happen with this team in the postseason, right? The last Super Bowl win, they snuck in as the sixth seed and then went on a ridiculous run because, you know, their record did not reflect how good of a team they were. They've been the one seed three times now, in that, you know, in the intervening span, and have won one game combined between those three seasons as the one seed. So who the hell knows? Just, I still prescribe to the get in, and, you know, and then things will sort themselves out, but, at least get in, win the division, and then give yourself a home game and then try to go from there.
All right. So, you know, first matchup is week two, so it won't be that long until we get a chance to talk to each other again. And oh, almost forgot, real quick, what can you tell us about Luke Getsy? Because I know he wasn't the guy calling plays up there for you, but I also know that he was somebody you guys didn't want to see leave.
No, Getsy's a really interesting guy, a young offensive mind. He's worked under both McCarthy and LaFleur in Green Bay, and then he took a 1 or 2 year break, kind of in between there at one point to go work for Joe Moorhead at Mississippi State. He was the offensive coordinator down there, even though Moorhead was still calling plays. So he's kind of had a diverse background in terms of the types of offenses and that his bosses, his head coaches, have run. So I wouldn't pigeonhole him necessarily into like the Shanahan approach or like a McCarthy approach. I think he's going to be pretty adaptable and try to really work with the personnel that that he's got and try to make something work.
After 4 years of Nagy, adaptable is a sexy word.
I figured that would get you excited.
I mean that's what he said in the press conference, and I didn't know if that was just lip service or is he actually going to be that guy, because that's what this team needs, especially with the roster that we currently have. You know, we have a bunch of guys that are either, you know, cast-offs or whatever from other organizations like Byron Pringle and you know, guys like Equanimeous St. Brown and things like that as far as our wide receiver room is concerned. We have some good tools in our running back room right now, and we also have a Swiss Army knife in a quarterback who can throw the ball, he can run, you know, and do things like that. It's, you know, it's year two. It's an important year for that young quarterback, and being adaptable and like, okay, well, that doesn't work, we'll rip this page out of the book, we'll go to the next one kind of thing is a philosophy that he needs right now. So hopefully, you know, Getsy is who he says he is. And, you know, if what you just said is true, then hopefully we will have a guy that will put us in the best position to succeed, as opposed to trying to wedge everybody into this offensive scheme that does not work for those guys. So, you know, because, I mean, my frustration with Nagy and his play calling, you know, began in 2019, which was only year number two, after we ran the power eye against the Chargers to the tune of 155 yards and 2 touchdowns from Montgomery, only to have that schmuck tell the press corps, I didn't come here to run the power eye. Are you sure? Because your rookie running back just ran for, you know, 150 and 2 touchdowns against a pretty good Chargers defense, and you might want to, you know, dip into that from time to time, and he just didn't. Yeah. You know, the only reason we ran the ball as much as we did in that game was that the week before against the Saints, we ran the ball 7 times in a football game on Walter Payton Day, of all things. You know, it was like Walter Payton bobblehead day. We ran the ball 7 times in a football game. We were only down one score until like midway through the fourth quarter. So, yeah, but instead we're going to have Trubisky throw the ball 54 times in that game against the Saints. So, yeah. So I'm hoping that, you know, what you just said about him being adaptable is true. And we see an offense that, you know, maybe it's going to struggle to find itself for a while, but when it does, it will be because of trial and error. And we've figured out who we are versus, oh, well, that doesn't work, let's run it again. You know, because that's basically what we just sat through for the last 4 years with Nagy. So, all right, Evan, this has been a blast as usual, and we look forward to talking to you again prior to our legally mandated primetime game, week number two, on Sunday nights in Lambeau. And where can we keep up with you in the meantime?
Yeah, you can always find me at Tex Western on Twitter. You can find us at Acme Packing Co. on Twitter. That's acmepackingcompany.com is the URL for the website. We just broke down our top 10 plays for the Packers 2021 season. You're not going to like number one, but your listeners probably won't like it either. But
spoiler alert, what's number one?
Let's just say a slogan that launched 1,000 t-shirts came out of that play.
I see. Okay.
So, but yeah, there's some good ones in there, and we'll be firing up our roster preview here coming up in the next couple days. So all that's going to be coming along, and I'm not sure when this will be going live, but that some we might be in the middle of that when that happens. But
yeah, this will be next no, not next week, but the week after.
Perfect. Yeah,
we'll be today is the 7th. Next week on Tuesday is the Lions. Next Thursday is the Vikings. The following Tuesday is when this one will drop. So a little bit of time between now and when this officially drops.
Sounds good. Yeah. So we're in the middle of our 53-man prediction and roster breakdown to get ready for Packers training camp, which starts, I think, first practice is Wednesday. I want to say that's the 27th of July. So looking forward to seeing this team get back on the field. It's coming quick.
Because we have a new head coach, we get to start a little earlier.
Ah, that's right.
Rookies report on the 23rd, veterans on the 25th. So, yeah, it'll like the week that this episode drops will be the last week without football because training camp will start that Saturday.
So, Love it.
Yeah, can't wait. Can't wait to answer these questions. Can't wait for the season to get started so life can get back to normal again. Am I right?
Absolutely. We're almost there.
All right, Evan, this has been fun. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Always my pleasure, man. Go Pack, go.
As always, want to thank our good friend Evan Western for joining us to help preview the 2022 Packers. And, of course, we see them early, week number two for our legally mandated Sunday night football appearance at Lambeau Field. So, you know, we're playing at Lambeau, so not only does it have to be prime time, but, you know, it's maybe one of these days, you know, except for the special exception that we made in 2019 where, you know, we only get to do the one night to the one prime time thing. We did it in Chicago to open the season. And maybe one of these days we'll be able to flip it back to that where, Soldier Field is the prime location and not, Lambeau. But, anyway, so it won't be long before we get a chance to talk to Evan again, as we preview week number two, when we head out to Lambeau for Sunday night, football. But then it'll be a while before we see him again, week 13, which will be our last game before the bye, since we have that late week 14 bye this season. So there you have it, guys. For all of our opponent previews, that's all of them. Everybody that we face, we are all done. And then now the only show that we have left before we can complete the cycle, if you will, is, as I said at the top of the show, to look inward. To look at ourselves and our beloved Chicago Bears. And, of course, who else would join me for that episode but our good friend from Locked On Bears, Lauren Cox. So come back on Thursday when Lauren and I will look in depth at our beloved Chicago Bears. And, you know, we'll go through 2021. We'll talk about the search and Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus and the kind of underwhelming offseason that we had with free agency and such, but also what we got out of it. We'll talk about the draft. We'll look forward to the schedule. We'll cover every single inch of it that we possibly can. And then this Saturday, rookies report to training camp, and then Monday, the veterans come in, and it won't be long until August 13th is here when the Bears kick things off at noon on Saturday, August 13th, take on the Chiefs and kick off the preseason, and then we're pretty much off to the races after that. I am very excited. It is getting closer and closer all the time. So come back on Thursday for the finale as we preview the 2022 Chicago Bears with our good friend Lauren Cox. And until then, my name is Larry D, and this has been Bears Talk Underground.